something fun, something nice to give back to the fans and to include them as well. So the music video we shot it at home in my house, in our house here in Kuala Lumpur. My husband shot, you know, everything on an iPhone. So and we encouraged, you know, fans and friends to send in the video Jones. Of just them and Quincy Jones.
Just casual.
This episode is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com. Jewel. What's going on? Welcome to the New Music Business. I am your host, Ari Herstand, author of How to Make It in the New Music Business, the book. Today, my guests are the Malaysian R&B singer Yuna, Ben Willis, and Carlo Fox, the co-founders of Indie Pop, management company based out of LA. This was a great conversation. This is the first time I had a conversation with three people at once for the show. Yuna was coming to us from Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia, and Ben and Carlo and I were all coming in LA, but the wonders of Zoom brought us all together on a late Thursday night, so it could be morning for Yuna. Now, Yuna is an incredibly talented artist, and she has done collabs with Tyler, the Creator, G-Eazy, Pharrell, Usher, the list goes on. And we kind of dig into it, how she kind of got her start on MySpace to now being an independent artist in 2020 and what that looks like and what release strategies look like. Who are the new gatekeepers? Who are the gatekeepers now? Both Carlo and Ben have worked in the industry for decades, and they talk about, you know, what radio looked like then and what radio looks like now. Yuna was signed to a major label and now she's independent, and the differences between that and how they approach music videos and playlist promotion and who handles what. It was a great conversation. I love chatting with them. And make sure you stick around to the very end to hear what their definitions of making it in the new music business are. It's very inspiring. And as always, please follow me on Instagram. You can find me at Ari Herstand. You can find all of us and the show at Ari's Take on both Instagram and Twitter. Follow Yuna on Instagram. That's just Yuna, Y-U-N-A. And please visit aristake.com. Sign up for the email list so you get notified about all future podcast episodes and all my musings in the new music business. All right, let's kick into the show. So this is the first time I've had three people at once on the show, and but I'm excited because I got the artist side, I got the business side, and we're going to just kind of wrap it all together in what's going to be, no doubt, a very interesting conversation. Where are you all coming to me from, first off? Because we're doing this at 8 p.m. L.A. time, because I know someone's overseas. I'm assuming that's Yuna, right?
Yep, that's me.
Sorry, where are you,
Yuna? I'm in Kuala Lumpur. I'm in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia right now. Cool. So yeah, I'm from here, and yeah, so I'm back here. Yeah.
When did you go? Did you go back kind of at the start of quarantine?
Yes, I did. So we actually, I was scheduled to, my husband and I, we were scheduled to fly back to Kuala Lumpur for like a week, you know, so we packed, you know, for a week trip. And then we flew right into quarantine. So I feel like I've been wearing the same jacket, the same clothes. And, you know, we went out shopping like maybe twice.
Oh, wow.
In the past like 5 months. So,
oh, no.
It's all good, you know, like we get to hang out with the family a lot. So it's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's nice. And you, at least you're with some family and you're safe and sound there. How has it been? I mean, are you staying at like your parents' place, or where are you staying?
Yeah. So we have a house. Okay. I you know, like we got this house like 5 years ago, maybe. So okay, nice. Whenever I come back to Kuala Lumpur and I, you know, like we travel home a lot, like from, mm-hmm. from LA. And, yeah. But it's always like a week trip or like, you know, 2 weeks. And, this is the first time in a very, very long time that I've been out here for more than 2 months, you know? So,
sure.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How has it been now that you're kind of getting back to your hometown? How does it feel for you to be there for so long?
It's nice. It just yeah. feels like I'm back, you know, like, I'm turning 34 this year. I really feel like I'm back to being 23, you know, like I hang out with my friends, like friends yeah. that I grew up with, before I moved to LA. So, mm-hmm. And we're just like hanging out and just kind of like realizing, oh shit. Yeah. You have two kids now, you know? So it's kind of nice to be able to, go back into that. And of course the food, we just like never worry about Malaysian food anymore. My husband and I were just so yeah. happy. It's just like, oh yeah, let's just order Malaysian food, or like let's just go across yeah. the street and get like delicious nasi lemak or something like that, you know. Whereas it. In LA you're just like dreaming about it. It's just like, oh, I can't order nasi lemak right now, you know.
Yeah,
so, just like stuff like that. It's kind of nice. It's kind of cool.
Nice. Carlo, Ben, where are you coming to me from right now?
I'm in LA, Echo Park, so on the east side.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I'm in Pasadena.
Okay, cool. And I'm in Los Feliz, so I'm splitting the difference here.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah, you're right between us.
Yeah. How is that? I'm curious, Yuna, how is the, are people in Malaysia still on lockdown? Are you in quarantine there, or is it eased up, or how's the virus happening there right now?
How's the virus doing out here?
How's the virus doing?
It's, you know, like we're doing pretty good in terms of like, we have everything kind of like under control, you know, like we have like a few cases, like, and they're not like, what do you call it? Increasing is just like this, yeah. you know? So kids are okay. able to go back to school now. And we have like a kind of like a strict SOP. Like when you go to stores, you have to kind of just like scan like a QR like code and then key in your info. And then it says, oh, you're all clear to go. So this way, you know, they also have like a ton of websites. Like one website is called outbreak.my. It's just like for you to kind of just like know where you've been, and like if there's like cases reported in that cafe or restaurants, you know, so places to kind of just like be, you know, just be careful when you go into this neighborhood, because there was like a case like over there.
Oh,
so
gosh, wow.
It's pretty good. Like we're pretty good in just like, okay, let's scan and let's, you know, take our temperature. I don't know if you guys do that out there. I'm like, I don't think
they don't do anything out here.
No, wait. I'm really curious.
I feel like
no masks out here.
I feel like, I know. I feel like out of every like city in the U.S., L.A. is the best way to do this. But then I'm thinking, no, L.A. people probably would hate this. It's just like, why am I, you know, putting in my info, like, you know, this is not safe. So it's probably probably people will not be cool about that. But over here, it's just you know, you got to do this. So
I'm so curious. So what happens when you give them the QR code? What data do they have of you? Is it like the last time you were that you're all clear, like you've been tested, or that you have the antibodies, or what kind of information do they know about you?
So they just know that you were, you know, let's say if you go to a cafe and then you scan your QR code, they have your info, you know, saying that, oh, you were at this restaurant. And then maybe, you know, later on, if they do find out there was like a guy who just came from like a high risk area and then went to this place, and then maybe he got sick and then he got tested positive, and then they will go back to like where he has been and reach out to all the, you know, everyone who was in that same place in the same time, you know, so they can like reach out to you like, hey, so we need you to come in to get tested. So
wow, that's
I mean that's
cool.
That sounds amazing. I wish we had something like that here. That sounds like we could contain it a lot better.
Yeah.
You know, if you go to Little Tokyo, they take your temperature before you can go in the grocery store. Actually, me and my daughter, Massey, went down there the other day and you couldn't get in the grocery store unless they took your temperature, which I thought was pretty forward specifically for LA. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're not seeing too much of that. Right.
That's it.
That's it.
That's it.
Yeah. That's the most precaution that anyone's taken.
Yeah, you scan that, or you know, you kind of just like, if you don't want to do that, you can just put in your name and like, you know, your temperature. So they have like a record. So, and then you're not allowed to sit like close to each other. They have like, you know, kind of like a social distance, like, okay, per table, only four people, you know, so that's it. Yeah.
Crazy. It's pretty cool. Well, that's so interesting. I mean, this is, I'm so curious how every country is handling this right now, because we're handling it, I think, the worst. So it's interesting to hear some case studies of how everyone else is doing it so much better than us. So cool. So I'm curious, let's dig in a little bit. What is the relationship? Can you just kind of break down, Carlo, Ben, Yuna, how did you guys meet? What does this dynamic look like? What are your roles? Like, break it down for us. Who wants to go?
Sure. I mean, I could, if you guys want me to go first, I could go first.
Go for it, Ben.
Well, didn't it start with Carlo?
It did. I was actually going to start with that. So I was flying from somewhere and Carlo calls me and he goes, yo, I was scouring MySpace. And at the time there was an independent chart.
Yes.
And he goes, there's this girl, her name is Yuna. I think you would really, really love her voice. You need to check it out. And then Carlo, right? Is that kind of how it went, right?
Yeah, I think that's how it went. Yeah. I was scouring back then.
Oh,
I was
God, I love the MySpace days.
I go in the MySpace and there was all these cool little charts. And then you could go into the charts and you could see whose people's, you know, you could see where their top eights were.
That's right.
So you could kind of go in like a deep rabbit hole and discover all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah.
So cool. So he had sent the music and I was like, oh man, this is amazing. Like, this girl's voice is insane. And then that began, I would say, sort of the chase. So at that time, Yuna had the biggest record in Malaysia and she was really, really extremely busy. And I started to send MySpace messages to her and no response. Probably after like 3 or 4 months, finally her.
Ben didn't have that many followers either, too. So yeah, like,
I would probably like hella shit.
It looked kind of shady, you know?
Yeah. So I continued to hit her and then her guitarist hit me back and said, hey, I'm sorry, Yuna's extremely busy. She can't talk to you right now. And I'm like, what do you mean she can't like talk to me? So I decided to go on Facebook and go to Facebook. And at the time, I think she had like 300,000 followers or whatever that thing is. It's over 2 million now, but it was like 300,000. And I said,
what year are we talking right now? Are we talking like 2009,
10? 2009. Yeah.
No, it wasn't 2009, maybe 2010 or 11, right?
No, it was 2009. That's when, 2009 is when it started. We didn't get into business until late 2010.
Oh yeah, because I was in the Bay. That's right, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So I started, I said, I will friend request every single person that follows her on Facebook. And the first
that was
person-
creepy too.
Yeah, that was super creepy.
That's not creepy.
I was like, yeah. I mean, it was, but I mean, the music was so good.
Hey.
And so the first person I requested coincidentally was Yuna's mom.
Ah.
And being the mom, like any mom, she responded and was like, oh my God, I'm so glad you like my daughter's music. And I was like, wait, your daughter? Like, I'm thinking like out of 300,000 people, her mom responded. And so her mom eventually after this is over about 8 months. So it took 8 months to get to like her mom. And then her mom connected me and Yuna on the phone. And I was like, hey, I really love your music. You're phenomenal. I want our company, Indie Pop, to represent you. But I know this is weird. You don't know me. I've been trying to contact you through social media. And I was like, you know, typically we would want to fly the artist that we want to sign out to meet us, but this is like different countries, different culture. If it's cool, I'll fly out and come meet you and your family. And that sort of was it. I flew out. I met Yuna and her family, and we hit it off immediately, immediately. And I was there probably for 4 days. And then I'd say, what, Yuna, 6 months after that meeting, you moved to LA?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's was it 6 months?
Probably. It was pretty quick.
No, it was pretty quick. I think like you came to KL and then like a month later, I remember it was very quick. Like a month later, I kind of just like cleared my schedule and just like, all right, well, let's go to LA. So I was there for it.
He was convincing.
For the first time, like maybe for three months.
Yeah. And we just did a bunch of sessions and we just started to record, you know, and.
What was the operation of Indie Pop at the time? So when you went there, what was the pitch?
Well, you know, at the time we hadn't had any massive success yet. Our early clients were Devin the Cataracts and a kid called Bobby Bracken.
Shout out to Bobby.
Big shout out. Bobby Bracken.
I'm going to make you a star, you know?
Oh yeah, Bobby told you he was going to make you a star, huh? we lived in a loft that was in downtown LA, and it was also the living room was an office. And then any artists that we're working with would end up getting kind of apartments in the same building.
Yeah.
Nice.
So everybody kind of moved into the same building, and that was kind of our operation. I don't know what our cell was then. It was early days. Maybe you
know. I mean, the cell was. I mean, I had at that up until 2000 before we started Indie Pop. I had already had 12 years in the music business, so I started my career at a record label called Raucous Records, which we had Mos Def, Talib Kweli. Then I went to Rockefeller, so I worked with Mos, Kweli, then worked with Kanye West, The Young Guns, Beanie Siegel, and all that. So I had a completely whole other career before we even started Indie Pop. So I think that like. A big part of myself is I wrote this email and I was like, look, I've been in the music business. I was a radio promoter. That was my job. And so I knew the landscape of the music business in America. So the cell was like, if you sign with us, we know how to give you the platform to get your music out. And the funny thing was, is I think in between, correct me if I'm wrong, Carlo, right when we were getting into business with Yuna, we had a hit single with Bobby Brackens called 143, which was a huge song on the West Coast. And then right around the time that Yuna came out, our artist Cataracts wrote and produced Like a G6. So, you know, we met Yuna, we were having a moment with this kid, Bobby Brackens, who had our first hit record with our company. And then we had this global monster called Like a G6, which then set the career off for the Cataracts, for Dev. And then we were kind of rocking. And so that sort of, when Yuna came out, we were able to get her in sessions, introduce her to different musicians, and kind of have her cross-pollinate with our roster of artists.
And it's all a management kind of operation and situation. Was that the arrangement with all the artists? This is just strictly management, and then you would link up with other team members?
In the beginning, they were more production deals, so the deals were fully encompassing. And then as we grew, you know, we would do... Like, for instance, Yuna's first deal was with the Fader label, and then it went to Universal. So obviously we had rights, different rights, and then we would sort of like, you know, license those rights out.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Was that always the goal, was to kind of go – oh, we lost Yuna. was that always the goal to get a record deal? Was that kind of the focus? I mean, this is 2010, so that's kind of what people were doing at the time, but you're like, we want to go major. You said you started setting up sessions. What was that like? What was the focus of these sessions, and what was kind of the goal when Yuna came out to LA?
Yeah, you know, the you know, the funny thing is yeah, you know, you mentioned this is 2010 was a lot different than 2020, you know. And 2010 was like, you didn't really, you weren't really counting on making very much money from from records. It was downloads. There wasn't very much money in it. And really, like, you know, there was a big trend at the moment to give out music for free, just to build your fan base and make your fans happy. So, you know, you might get a little bit of money from iTunes, but like the idea of like, of digital music money being like a big part of the pie, that wasn't how it was for most artists in 2010. So, so really, yeah, a lot of the idea was let's do a deal with a major. Let's get like, as much exposure as we can.
Were they writing big advances at the time? I mean, this is a time when I feel like advances were pretty small relatively to what they had been and what they are now.
I think they were as low as they had like ever been.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah.
They were really low. And the idea was, so you might get a little bit of an advance. It wasn't much. You'd get a little bit of money. But really the idea was to use them as a platform to market and promote your music so you could, so you could tour and sell merch and do all these other things. Right. And obviously, you know, things have gone 360 degrees since then. And now, now streaming is such an important thing. So sort of our mentality back then was like, yeah, let's do major deals. You know, now where we're at, you know, we've kind of, we built our whole new company all about kind of empowering artists to kind of retain ownership of their works and build careers where they're able to kind of generate recurring revenue on an ongoing basis and sort of, you know, realize their intellectual property and ownership of all that. So, but in 2010, that wasn't where our heads were.
Yep. So, well, I want to fast forward to where we are now. And it's interesting. So is the reason that you, cause the last record, Rogue came out on Verve, right? Rouge. Rouge. Rouge came out on Verve under, cool. Universal.
Correct.
And was that because like the deal ended and now, I mean, I know Stay Where You Are that was released independently.
Yeah.
Is that a reason that, like, was the deal over? Was this like a conscious decision? Like, let's do it.
I can explain it to you. So we had put out three albums with Verve. We had been trying to get out of the deal since the first album. Okay. It was a situation where her records did well. There was a huge mismanagement problem within the infrastructure of Verve. They continued to, you know, there was a different president and CEO probably every single year that we were there. So we were in a situation where like up until the last album, it was kind of all over the place. We as a company managed, marketed, promoted, A&R'd all of the projects, which I think were actually really successful. I mean, we were able to get it a number one and a number two record at radio. And look, Verve for all intents and purposes, is an independent label. They're under Universal, but they're technically like an independent label. Up until this last album, Rouge, they finally got it together and have a phenomenal team over there. We had just been requesting to leave. And so it was very much like a, what's that called when you leave? It's okay. It was like
amicable.
It was an amicable split. There's no hard feelings with them at all.
So I mean the record it's packed with features and incredible like huge like collabs. I mean you know, I'm curious, these artists that are on it, you know, we have Tyler the Creator, we have G-Eazy. Are these artists that you wanted to work with, or was this Verve kind of coming in saying, you know what, I think a Tyler the Creator Yuna collab would be that's what we should be looking at? Like, how did that work out, and what was that like, especially with Tyler the Creator?
No, I think it was like probably like 99%, 98%, maybe 2% being Ben would be, you know, like us making a decision like, we should work, you know, we want to, like, for me, like, I really want to work with people that I really like and that I know, you know, that I've met. And especially with Tyler, you know, I've always wanted to work with him, but I just don't know like which angle, you know, like we've known each other since 2011, 2012, you know, like I've known of him and he knows of me, and I've performed at his festival, and and I'm like, you know, like he's so cool, like I always, you know, wanted to work with him. I just don't know how. So when Rouge came, I wrote this amazing song called Castaway. And I'm like, I love this song. I feel like maybe Tyler would be down to jump on this. Mm-hmm. And true enough, you know, like we kind of just like, I told Ben about it. I'm like, I don't know how we're going to do this, but we're going to try. So trying to get him on the song was an interesting process because it was, you know, not exactly like as easy as just like, you know, reaching out to Jay Park, who's, mm-hmm. You know, like worked with indie pop before, or like G-Eazy, you know, like Kyle, who's mm-hmm. a friend of mine. So yeah, you know, it's just like, for me, back to the question, sorry. So back to the question, like I really want to work with people who also see the value of, you know, having a song with me as well. Like they, you know, they understand like what I'm all about, and they like what I do. And, you know, the respect has to be mutual. And that's like, I think the most important formula to have, you know, instead of just mm-hmm. like a label telling you like, oh, have a song with this person, and then you're not friends, you know, like you kind of yeah. just like, oh, there's no human connection there. And sure. each and every one of these artists that I've worked with, you know, I actually had a real conversation with them. You know, even with Tyler, like I spoke to him maybe for like 10 minutes, and then but I get him, you know, and I see like mm. oh, he's a cool guy, he's a nice person, you know, like he loves what he's doing, he takes everything seriously, you know. So mm-hmm. Yeah,
how did
so,
that end up happening?
I look up to him.
Did you how did that end up happening? Yeah.
A good story. So I think like story.
After I know we sent the song over, and we didn't really like, you know, I guess like he was like super busy with his project, and I totally understand when that happens, you know, and mm-hmm. But you know, living in LA and Tyler being Tyler, who's just what I love about him, he's just out there. He would just be on Melrose, you know, like Third Street eating sure. ice cream, and that's how I found him, just eating ice cream on Third Street, you know. And I was like, Tyler, and literally on that day it was just like, I think I just got off the phone with Ben, like, I don't know about this Tyler thing, maybe we should find someone, you know, like on this song, and because I don't know if we can wait anymore, you know, for them to get back to us. And then he walks, you know, next to my car, like, just like.
Talk about manifesting something,
it was
right?
Insane.
I know.
It was insane.
It was literally, and I'm like, okay, this is not happening. Should I just get out right now? Just park my car and like, okay, I'm just going to go out and just
wow.
call him.
Yeah.
Tyler, you know, and he's like, oh, hey, what's up, Yuna? I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy. Like, I've been trying to like, you know, reach out to you. So. You know, we started talking, just like, so I have this song, I don't know if you know. Nice. So yeah, and that's how it happened. Just like, I sent him over the song, and the rest is history, you know. So
man, you should teach a seminar on manifesting what you want, because that, I mean, that's so perfect. That's incredible. That's great. Okay. I mean, so but you had, because I'm curious, you've had so many collabs over the years. I mean, you know, Usher earlier on, and like, is that something, especially early on, because Ben, you were talking about how when Yuna first got to LA, you sure. were setting up sessions.
Sure.
How does that happen? Like,
yeah.
When you're setting up sessions, were these writing sessions, and was so, kind of yeah. Yuna a writer at the time also?
So, you know, the thing about it was, is when we decided to work with Yuna, we knew that there needed to be a way that she was sort of introduced into our business from a cultural standpoint. So there wasn't mm-hmm. like a big sell. It was about finding people that understood our vision of music, right? Mm. That you could play the music for, and those people would completely understand the vision. And so, you know, when me, Carlo, and Josh, our other partner, sat down and talked about, all right, we're gonna bring this girl to Malaysia. There's like one, I knew one person that I felt would get this vision, would mm. understand this vision. And his name was Rob Stone. Rob Stone owns The Theater, him and his partner, John Cohen. I'd known Rob Stone and John Cohen since probably 1996, 97. And I was like, yo, I talked to Rob and I was like, there's this girl that you need to meet. You're going to understand why I want you to meet her. Mm-hmm. Send him the music, call me back. And he was like, bro, I get it. We need to be in business. And I said, but here's the challenge. You have to get her in the studio with Pharrell. Cause I knew Rob and Pharrell were tight. Mm. And he was like, no problem. Called Pharrell. Pharrell heard the music and Pharrell was like, I get it. Let's go in the studio. So all of our sort of like, all of our situations of collaborations, Jhené Aiko, Usher, G-Eazy, Pharrell, I knew that those people were fans of Yuna. I was like, we need to find out who are fans of Yuna. So in the beginning stages, the Pharrell thing was a long shot. That was just like sort of like the star of the moon and everything sort of aligned. And he understood, you know, what the music was like. And so we set out with the intention of trying to find people that we knew would want to work with her, not for money, not because she was hot or whatever. Like at the time, it was about because her music and what she stood for as an artist was integrity, had real morals. And we knew that we needed to find people that were going to understand that. And that's sort of like how we set out. So when we started setting sessions up, we sort of shot for the moon, and the Pharrell thing was probably
Was this happy era Pharrell? I mean, when was this?
This was pre-happy. So the funny thing with Pharrell at that time is like, it was like, oh, you're going in the studio with Pharrell, whatever. He was cold. He was like cold as ice. I mean, was a time when Pharrell was like kind of like
post NERD pre-happy.
Oh, and in my mind, I'm like cold. I'm like, dude, this guy's like my favorite. This is like my favorite producer of all. Him and like DJ Premier probably arguably my two favorite producers of all time. And so I was like hot, cold, in between. This guy is going to be able to give Yuna like a gem. And so that was kind of like how we wanted to figure out. And so, you know, props to Rob Stone. I mean, Rob Stone like literally understood him and his partner, John Cohen, and they understood the vision and they understood our vision. And so when, you know, Yuna came to America, we started going in sessions with the producers that we represented, Nick Knack, who produced a ton of hit records for Khaled, Tinashe. She wrote with Bobby Bracken. She wrote with Niles from the Cataracts. So there's all these sort of like pre things we did. We went in the studio and like cooked up a lot of stuff together ourselves. And then we took that music and was able to show Rob and John, and they got it like that.
You know, what was it like when you were kind of all these sessions, they were setting up these sessions for you? I mean, especially going in with Pharrell, were you familiar with his work? Were you a fan, or is this just kind of like, all right, I'm going to another session. We'll see what happens.
I mean, it was definitely like a scary thing for me, like Pharrell. Yeah. No, wait, which Pharrell? So, you know, just making sure. And then they were like, no, like Pharrell Williams, like you're going to go to Miami and work with him. And I'm like, oh, okay. And mind you, this is like, I literally just started going into actual sessions. Like I've never been in a studio writing just session, writing and producing, you know, writing sessions, like being with a producer, and you know, the producer does the music, I write. I've never done that before. And probably like when I came to LA, it was my first time, because before, you know, I was such like an indie kid, like me and my band, you know, like we sit down and we jam and we kind of just like record, and it takes like a week to record a song, you know what I mean? Like so this was like my first experience of just like, okay, this is like a new thing, like everything is electronic, and I was not used to it. So when I went into the studio with Pharrell, you know, it was just like I was such a huge fan, you know, so I just like, I don't know how to react, but at the same time I was like, okay, well, I've done this before with other producers. I mean, like smaller producers at the time. Well, I've done that, you know, so I feel like I can kind of just like do this and be at the same level, you know, just be professional. I'm like, snap out of it, you know, just like be professional. And, you know, and true enough, you look at him and you see him working and like playing music. And it's like, oh, he's a musician. He's just like me, you know? So I think having that in mind, just like kind of like put me in a more relaxing like mood a little bit, you know? It's just like, okay, well, I'm just going to take my time and write whatever I feel, you know, and talk to him like a normal person. I'm sure he appreciates that as well. So, yeah. And instead of just like, oh my God, it's Pharrell. And it's just like him, a musician, Pharrell, you know? So, yeah.
Real quick, I want to let you know about Too Lost. Too Lost is a new distribution company to the space. And let me tell you, I am very impressed with them. I got a full deep dive demo with the founder, and yeah, they're very innovative. And when you come into the distribution space at this stage with how crowded it is, you better be innovative, and they are. Yes, they will get your music out to Spotify, Apple Music, all the places, plus 450 other outlets around the world. They do not take a commission. This is why 300,000 artists and labels have already used them. They've already distributed 7 million songs. They offer payment splitting, and they don't charge your collaborators for this service for the payment splitting. They will just pay your collaborators directly for free. They have publishing administration with BMG, so you know it's legit. A lot of distributors have fallen into trouble with using some other less than legit pub admin services. Well, Too Lost is partnered with BMG. You know it's legit. They offer instant royalty advances. This is something that's very cool. And if you have historical streaming data and you need just a bulk payment up front, they can see how much your music has earned in the past. I'm like, all right, we think we know what you're going to earn in the next 3 years. Here's a check for $100,000 or whatever it will be. And you can just click a button and get that distributed and into your account immediately. They do lyrics and credits distribution for free. They have a very innovative analytics platform where, yes, you will see real-time analytics for Spotify, Apple Music, but also Pandora, Deezer, SoundCloud, and Peloton. They're the only ones that do Peloton. They also have a service where you can search the internet wherever your music is being used, and it will just show you a chart of everywhere, every TikTok video, everywhere, every YouTube video, everywhere your music is possibly being used. I've never seen this before. That was very cool. They'll register with Sound Exchange, and they have a fraud prevention tool, and they're doing fraud prevention. So if you're worried about your music, you know, getting a bot attack or something like that and getting ripped down, which we've seen is a big issue, they have fraud prevention tools that are better than most other distributors that I have seen. Check out Too Lost. You can just go to toolost.com. Use the promo code Ari's Take for 3 months free and try them out. Let them know what you think. Cool. That's cool. So I'm curious, now, since you've worked with a major, I mean, you refer to Verve as kind of seeming like an independent label, but I've seen the music videos from Rouge. They look very high budget. And the I'm curious to know what you look at a label for and to do, and the relationship between you know, your role with the label in terms of just kind of the release strategy, the budget, the music videos, the marketing, the PR. Like, what roles are you handling and what are they handling, and how does that relationship work? And now that you're independent, you know, where are the responsibilities falling, and who's kind of picking up that, I don't know if it's slack, but who's handling all of those responsibilities that typically the label did, or how does that work?
Well, let's compare it to when I was signed to a major label.
Yeah. And it's for anyone, for all of you, I guess. Sure. Is this like something that you all talk about together? And and how does it, like, who's handling all the responsibilities? I'm curious. Like, we have artists, we have management, label.
Yeah.
I think, you know, especially for the indie artists out there and the managers who are kind of getting started, and it's like they're working with the label. I think a lot of times people are fumbling around figuring out who does what. Mm-hmm. How, kind of break that down.
You can go, Yuna, I guess.
Well, I mean, like my role is always the same. Like I feel like I'm the creative director of my brand, you know, like since the very beginning, since the MySpace days. I mean, like Carlo can tell you, like my profile, it's very me, you know. At the time I was like 20, 21, and I already know, you know, the aesthetic that I was going for. So up until today, you know, like I feel like for that, like I still want to be in control of that. Sure. And the music, the songs, the songwriting, the lyrics, you know, like if all of these, like all, anything and everything that has to do with the music, the visuals, the art, everything has to be from me or like approved by me, you know? And, I think when I was working with, major labels, the most important thing that I wanted from them was to give me a platform, you know, like, you know, stuff like, of course, like artists can never do, which is like getting on radio or getting on charts or, you know, all these like getting on TV or just all these things that I don't know. And I know as an artist, I don't need to worry about that, you know? And so that is like, to have that and also to be signed to a major label, it adds like a little bit of like weight to your like career. Kind of just like, you know, like when people know you're like, oh, she's signed to Verve. Okay, cool. Let's kind of like hear what she has to say, you know, instead of like, you can do that too as an independent artist, but you need to be, you know, like your Chance song rapper, has to be like a viral hit. Like,
right.
Like, yeah. So,
So that's great. And I love hearing that. That's the artist perspective. Now let's hear the management, the suits perspective. Carlo, Ben, yeah. I'm curious to hear how kind of you approach it.
I think that for us, you know, the first thing we do before any album cycle is me and Yuna and the team sits down and we talk about the vision. We talk about the vision, and then, you know, me and Carlo are very seasoned in the music business. I mean, I've been doing this for almost 25 years now. Having relationships, super deep relationships within the Universal buildings, the Warner buildings, the Sony buildings is sort of second nature, and I feel very comfortable in those spaces. Mm-hmm. And those people know that from a business perspective, me and Carlo are going to handle our business. So if we say we're going to do something, it gets done. If it means we're going to show up on time, we're going to show up on time. If, you know, and we have so many deep relationships. I mean, I ran a radio promo department for 10 years. So, you know, being able to help lead the label or even just call bullshit on the label, which I think is really important. We're able to do that because of our relationships in the music business. So I think that, like, you know, the truth is when you're a young manager, you're representing an artist, getting a record deal is not it. It's just getting the deal as part of the thing. And then you got to go into the deal and understand how to function within the infrastructure of a major label. Who is the person that you talk to get the budgets approved? How do you get the rate, you know, how do you get a video budget approved, and how do you get the radio budget approved, and how does that roll out in time, and how does that coincide with your creative? And I think because we're experienced in that, we know exactly what buttons to push, what buttons not to push, what fights to fight, what fights not to fight. And I think that, like, ultimately, I think my most favorite part about working with Yuna is that it starts and ends with her. You know, I trust her. We trust her creative vision. We trust what she stands for. So if an opportunity comes and it's the biggest opportunity in the world and it doesn't fit within who she is as an artist, we don't do it, and it's okay. You know what I mean? Whereas some artists, you're like, you might want to take that bag because it might not, you know what I mean? With her, we don't worry about those things. So I, you know, to answer your question from our perspective, you know, sitting in an office with the head of Atlantic or the head of Verve or the head of Universal, that's like sitting here talking to you guys. It's not like a big thing. So I think that, like, when you look at it like that and you and you approach your business like actual business, it's okay. And everything sort of falls into place and you have to work really hard, you know?
Break it down a little bit more specifically for me. So, like what is the label doing? You guys are very experienced. Yes. But what are they doing? What are you doing? Okay. They're doing, you know, radio budget, but what does that actually mean? And, you know, you're getting video budget approved, but like, what are they actually doing? And what are you actually doing other than like pressing on them saying, give me more money?
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting because I think that a lot of times as, you know, as a young artist and a young manager, you go into a relationship with a label, a major label or an independent label, with the kind of misconception of what they are going to do. And you kind of, a lot of times you think that that's the end game, right? Like, oh, I'm signed. Like, I'm on now. Right. I'm like, I'm going to be rich and everybody's going to like me. And my music's going to be like on the radio all the time.
Yeah. Right.
But the truth is that's like, that's just a step. Right. And that, you know, it's that's not the end game. A lot of times it's just the beginning. Right. And so I think like Yuna said, you know, whether we're with a major, whether we're independent, like Yuna's the creative director behind the thing. She's the vision behind it. And then as far what me and Ben have found is whether there's a major label or whether there's not, we do most of the heavy lifting. Right.
Yeah.
We're doing most of the relationship. We're setting up the sessions. We're finding the creatives. We're finding the directors. The two main things that major labels or that labels in general are good for is money. If you don't have money, now there's another side to that. They're going to take your money in the future and you're going to make a lot less of it. But when you don't have any money and you're starting out and you want to shoot videos and you want to travel around and you want to do promo, like money is a factor. And then there's airplay, you know, and the truth is like Ben said, you know, for, you know, on as far as our new company, like as an independent distribution company and as an independent management company, we aren't bad at doing an independent radio campaign. And we actually do know the players and we can go through the process of hiring the indies and getting airplay. That being said, the major labels are the best at that. You know what I mean? Okay. So it's like there's really two things that like, you know, the major labels can really bring to the table, right? And that's like they give you money when you need it. And they're pretty good. They're probably better than most independents at getting airplay when that matters. Now, you know, in our world that we're in now, you don't always need airplay. You can you can create great content and you can make Seam stream. Interestingly enough, you know, you said you made a comment on those videos and they looked really high budget. Yuna and her husband actually directed and shot all of those. And they actually weren't high budget.
Are you serious? Oh, they look amazing. Great job.
Those were super, super homegrown.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
But
they look incredible.
But Yuna's husband, Adam, is like really, really dope. And okay. Yuna and him together are like really, they make really
pretty
cool.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. So, well, how important is radio these days? Because, you know, sure, majors are great at, you know, theoretically they have the radio connections and the radio muscle, but is radio important? And at what stage of the journey of the single do you actually go to radio and be like, all right, we hit 50 million streams. Now we can go to radio. What is that even? What's the conversation like?
I think that look, and I wanted to add on to what Carlos said.
Sure.
The other thing is that when you are a global priority for Warner Brothers or Atlantic or Universal, it's like magic. It's magical. Mm. So you basically have 200 plus people working on your project, right? So you have your people in UK, you have your people in France, you have your people in America, you have your people in Southeast Asia. So you have a whole global staff deploying onto your project. That is truly the most amazing thing ever. But how important is radio? You know, I think that we've spent so many years in the music business and we have a ton of amazing relationships with the DSPs, meaning Apple Music, Spotify. You know, it was funny enough with another client, we had a record go gold before we even did a record deal or went to radio. So if that sort of gives you perspective, you can break an artist that's streaming now. And I would say to any artist or any young manager, radio should be the last thing that you do these days. Because before it was like, you know, being a radio, an ex-radio promoter, we'd spend $100,000 to $150,000 at radio just to see if we even had anything. Whereas wow. now, you know what I'm saying? In like the late '90s, early 2000s, whereas sure. now you can really quickly, if your thing is on New Music Friday, then it goes to Pop Rising and it's working in the algorithm at Pop Rising and it goes to in today's top hits. I don't even know, like, sure, you, the next best step is to go to radio because that's going to help further the audience. But you know what I mean?
You may not need it though.
You might not even mm-hmm. need that. You know, it's like
a lot of times you don't need it. And I think that like Ben said, if you're a young artist or manager, that should be the last thing on your mind. Yeah. To your question, Ari, does it matter?
Yeah.
When it happens, it's when it happens and it really happens, it still is bigger than almost anything. That, and also just having a huge viral moment. Like if you have like a song, there's two things that are like the biggest thing that could happen to your song, right? Is that it could go to like number one at like pop or rhythm format or radio, or mm-hmm. it could just have an explosive viral moment through the video or the song, right? Mm-hmm. And both of those are two big things, right? And you could do the viral thing without the radio thing happening 100%. And a lot of artists do. A lot of artists, their formats don't even work at radio. But right. the thing is, you shouldn't base your career around wanting to get radio records. You should base your career off like building a fan base, building a streaming profile, and slowly growing. And when a radio record happens, it's like, you know, it's like Christmas. All right, cool. Everything got like three times bigger. I made like five times as much money as I made the year before. And it's great. It's like, now I don't, that might not be the case 5 years from now. That's the case right now. But I think that what is really important, I think, is just for people to understand is that like, hey, you don't need it though. You can build a very sustainable, great career without it. And I think that like, you know, if you're making a decision, should I go do a deal with a major label because I want radio? Usually you're going to like regret the decision if you're just 100%. You're going to a label because you think that they're going to give you radio, right? And you're going to give up everything that you give up when it comes to ownership and royalties and everything else because you think you're going to get radio. They can't do magic. They can't make your record get on the radio. You know, now if you have a record that is like radio worthy and it's already a hit record, then they will take it probably a little bit farther than if you did it independently, or maybe a lot farther. Mm-hmm. But just because you're at a major label does not mean you're going to have a hit record at radio. They can walk it in the door, but it still has to work. And, mm-hmm. and the truth is that like, you know, if you look at like some of the artists that have had success at radio independently, like the Major Lasers and the whatever, you know, if your record is good enough, if it's a really, really a hit, then it'll rise to the top on its own. Like Ben said, it'll go to the top. It's Spotify and you can, if you have a competent management team or management team and distribution team, you can take a record to the top independently if the song's good enough. You know? Yeah.
And how do you, I guess, what is that? Is there a strategy? Is there like, do you right now where we're at 2020, what is the release strategy? Like, what is like, all right, we have to make a video, or I have to, you know, hit up, we're doing Spotify playlist outreach, to the editors that we know, and we're going to user generated playlists, and, you know, we're going to like, what's the release strategy right now? Is press important? Like, how do you look at that?
Thanks, Carlo. I think that, and that's a really good question, Ari, because that's something that we constantly chat about internally. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I go back and forth a lot with myself because I lead all the pitching at DSP. So I'm the lead for our company with all of those things. And you know, for an artist like Yuna who has a track record at press is for sure 100% important for her. Mm-hmm. You know, she gets coverage in lifestyle, fashion, and music. So that's a part of the marketing plan for mm-hmm. her. But because we've garnered the relationships over the years, it's about creating a great digital strategy, creating a press strategy, and then also creating a phenomenal DSP strategy. And the DSP strategy is really simple for someone like Una, because the people that do those playlists and do that editorial already love her. So we have like a one up with that, you know? So for us, it's a blessing working with her, because it's really about focusing on how good we can make the music. How good is the songwriting? Does the song really stand the test of time? And 20 years from now, is this a song people are still going to want to listen to? And I think like a song like Stay Where You Are, which is, you know, a record that is just her vocals and a piano, which we really wanted to get back to that, because the last project was produced. It was really produced. I mean, it was by far, to me, one of our best projects we've ever put out. But I think it's time to get back to putting her vocal in the front and allowing people to understand that, like, this woman can actually really sing, and what she's talking about really, really matters. So for us and our marketing plan with Una is about creating phenomenal music, because everything else sort of falls into place. But yes, 100% catering to digital marketing and digital strategy, it's a must. Like, you have to do it. If you don't do it, you're tripping. You know what I mean?
And to continue on what Ben said, you know, a lot of times people ask that question, does press matter? You know, a lot of times people ask, like, what really matters and what doesn't, right? So it's like streaming and playlists really drive the needle, right? You get on the big playlist that directly turns into, like, you know, listens, new fans, money, all that type of stuff. That's like the end game. But the truth is you can't do that in a vacuum. What you need to do is you need to enhance the story. And like Ben said, the story starts with the music and the songwriting. And then from there, how can we build a compelling story both to the fans and to like the gatekeepers, right? And so, well, press on its own doesn't drive streams or sales, in my opinion, at all. What it does is it tells you a story, and you know, it allows us to kind of enhance that story. And the same things with the videos, and the same things with the kind of other media stuff that we do, is it just, I think it adds context to the music and to the story and to the kind of, into Una's vision. And that does matter. Because if we go with just music and we're just the guys with the music that are banging on the doors of all the playlisters, then it's like we're one-sided, you know. But when we're able to tell this story from the rest of the world, like, look at all this press stuff, look at the fashion stuff, look at the vision with the videos, look at how Una is kind of integrating like her culture and her vision and her values into everything that we do, then we're able to kind of tell a really compelling story. And I think that's like the most important takeaway, right? It's not about whether press matters or videos matter or whatever matters. It all matters. But what really matters is having a vision and a story, so that you, when you go out, however you're communicating it to the world, that you're communicating something that's like unique and compelling and different and interesting to people. And, you know, and whatever your medium is, some people, like, it doesn't matter if they never get press at all, because they have that, they're creating their own content. That's awesome. You know, so I don't think you need any of it. It's just like, how do you tell your story?
And who are, you say it's important to the gatekeepers. Who do you consider the gatekeepers of 2020?
The curator at the playlist.
Yeah, people who like the editors.
Editors.
The editors. Yeah. The playlist editors. Yeah. Okay. The
editors. It's back. It's what's crazy is I tell these guys all the time, I'm like, damn, man, I thought I escaped radio promotions. Nope. I'm right back in the hot seat in like 2020. I'm like, oh Jesus, man. I'm like,
give us the real talk here. How do you win over the playlist editors? What are you slipping them? You're not slipping them envelopes of cash, or you fly them out to Malaysia and be like, hey, let me take you around KL right now.
You know what's funny, man? Like,
there we go.
I'm like, all right, we're flying everyone out to KL. The thing about promotion, and the thing I think why I'm actually good at it, at like 15, 16 years old, I worked for a telemarketing company and I sold accidental death insurance. And I was really, really good at it.
That sounds about right, huh, Una?
That's amazing.
I'm like, listen, in case your husband falls down the steps, you're going to need to pay your bills, you know? With music people, with editors or program directors or DJs, right? Here's the thing. Here's the thing that we got. Here's the obvious. You're the DJ. You're the PD. You're the editor. You're program music. I'm the artist representative. I'm the promoter. I'm supposed to promote this music to you. That's a given, right? Mm-hmm. But it's about talking about music. You know, the funny thing is like, when you can connect with someone and you have to be persistent, but you got to be persistent in a way that's nice. Be nice, say thank you, be very gracious, shake their hand, smile. If you don't get this one, you're going to get the next one. And just being open and being passionate in not an annoying way. And I think that like I've figured out how to master that quality in life, which is like I get, always get what I want, but you just have to be nice about it, man. Like, you know, like I learned early on that like if I wanted to be successful in the music business, this is a long game. Like it's not about if I got the ad at Hot 97 this week or if the editor over at, you know, put my record in New Music Friday. I mean, there's a million times that we get New Music Friday, but there's sometimes that we don't get New Music Friday, and that's okay. That's okay. But to Carlo's point, the reason why it's important to have ancillary marketing going on with press, with digital marketing, is then you take that story and you just feed it back to them. And you're like, yo, I get it. Maybe you didn't understand it or get it, but that's okay. But guess what? These people over here get it. And that means I'm not tripping. So you repackage, you repurpose, and you resell. And then people understand it, you know? And so I've obviously had 25 years of doing this, so it's very easy. But what I say about the music business and what I say about pitching music, just use common sense. If you feel like that email is about to be annoying, don't send it.
It probably is.
Because it is. It will be.
Don't be annoying. Don't be annoying. But be passionate. And also, like, don't try and sell garbage to people. You know what I mean?
It's got
to
be good too, man. Like,
you have to make it good. And I know that's like, you know, maybe that's not what people want to hear. People want to think that there's like a magic bullet, but really the good stuff does float to the top. Now it's important to go and be passionate because there's also a lot of music in the world, and some good music doesn't get discovered because there's not a passionate person like banging down the doors, but it has to be really good. I mean, like, how many songs go on Spotify per day? Like 15,000?
40,000.
Yeah.
40,000 a day. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I saw that on your Instagram. Yeah. So it's like, you got it. So to Ben's point too, you have to be passionate. You have to not be annoying, but also for us, for the suits, like we have to make sure that like, that we're not selling, that we're not selling wolf tickets. And for that, that's like, that's why it's important that, like, you know, like that's why we're lucky to be able to work with artists like, you know, where we really believe in it. So we can be passionate.
You
we
have
can
to
be
believe like, in it.
Dope.
Yeah.
The music's dope. The vision's dope. And we could go sell that. Because if we didn't have that, we could have all the same relationships and the nice ideas and the good manners, and nobody gives a shit. So, you know, it does really start with like amazing music.
Yeah. And when you keep mentioning the story and help tell the story and like, you know, you're going to press with this, help tell the story of the video. When you are thinking about releasing a new song, a single, what are those conversations that you guys have with what is the story around this? Is it always about what the song means, or are you sometimes repackaging it in a way to help sell it better? Or what are those conversations like, and how do you tell that story?
I mean, it could be what the song means, or it could just be who Yuna is as an artist, or like, you know, so it could be anything, you know. It could, I think the bigger story, right, is like who the person is and who the vision is, right? And then within that, each of the individual songs like have their own meanings and come from a certain time and place, maybe in an artist's life. So for me and Ben, what's important, and for our whole team, either on the record side, on the distro side, and on the management side, on both, really what we pride ourselves on is taking the time to really understand that, you know? Because I think a lot of times what happens is you have an artist that understands their vision, but then you have everybody else around them who are just like, they're just kind of regurgitating statistics and saying the whole thing. And for us, you kind of miss the point there, right? It's not only about like your skip rates and like how many streams you got here and how many streams you got there. That's a part of the equation.
Sure.
It's about like the human side of things and the story and the emotion and the meaning behind things. And so what I think what's important for us is to, like, when Yuna says she's the creative director, we have to understand what that vision is and take the direction from her. Because if we're going to go be in and selling it to people and communicating it to people, you know, we just have to, we have to understand it. And so to answer your question, like, it could be anything. Mm. It could just be like, what is the purpose of this? Mm-hmm. What is the meaning behind this? And then telling people what that is, if it's not obvious. Yeah.
Well, as kind of to wrap up, Yuna, I'm curious, tell me the story behind Stay Where You Are and the video as well. It's so perfect for this time. It's just like, please, just stay where you're at. Right.
Exactly. I think that was also like when one of, it's really funny when, you know, you're not going to be in this situation and be like, you know what, I'm going to write a COVID song. No, you know, like, it's like, you don't want to be that artist for me, right. You know, at least, I'm not trying to be like, oh, everyone, you know, like, listen to this, we can make it, you know, we can survive this. Yeah. But you need like a song that's like gonna, you know, just that's gonna, a good song that's gonna make people happy. I think that's the most important thing, you know, for me. And it's not like intentionally for whatever reason. Stay Where You Are, I wrote that 3 years ago, I think. Mm. And you know, it didn't make it to the Rouge album, because I thought, you know, it's, you know, maybe it's not the vibe. I'm gonna keep this for something else. But then I, you know, had a lot of time here at home. I was just like, you know, I think it's time to put out music. But, you know, being in quarantine, you're just kind of like, you know, I feel like everyone goes through that. It's just being like, okay, like trying to stay creative at the same time, you know, like, it's so hard to do that, you know, trying to stay positive. But at the same time, it's so hard to motivate yourself to do something, because, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. For an artist like me, I don't know when's the next time I'm going to be able to go on tour again, you know? So how do I put music out right now, you know? And, so I think with Stay Where You Are, like, it was such a great song, and I was doing a lot of like IG live sessions, you know, for my fans. And I started playing for them Stay Where You Are on the piano, and I remembered it, you know, like it was very memorable, the song, the hook, the lyrics, and people loved it, you know. So I was like, I told Ben, you know, I think we should put this out. Coincidentally, the name of the song is called Stay Where You Are.
I was so like, perfect.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's what,
Ben's
yeah.
like, perfect COVID song. No, just right. kidding.
The suit, perfect, the suit they've been looking for a COVID anthem.
I'm like, come on, man.
Right.
COVID. Where's the silver lining in this thing, baby?
So, you know, everything is just like based in, you know, you staying at home and just trying to stay positive. So the lyrics to the song has nothing to do with COVID, by the way, right. In case in case anyone is like asking.
There's a remix that's about like washing your hands and
I know, right?
Yeah. Dr. Fauci remix. Is that right?
No. Right. But yeah, you know, it was something to kind of like something fun, something nice to give back to the fans and to include them as well. So music video, the music video, we shot it at home in my house, in our house, here in Kuala Lumpur. My husband shot, you know, everything on an iPhone. So, and we encouraged, you know, fans and friends to send in the
Quincy
video
Jones.
Of just them and Quincy oh, Jones. Boy,
just casual. Just casually, let's get Quincy part of the video. Yeah,
that's cool. So, yeah, you know, like, I was very lucky to have a bunch of really nice friends. Lil Mikaela included, you know, like, it's just really, really cool to have her. Just holding up a sign, Stay Where You Are. And I think that's, like, also a positive message. It could mean anything. It could be, it could be just stay at home, you know, and be safe. Or it could be, you know, stay inspired, you know, stay the person that you are before this happened. But at the same time, you know, like, just stay motivated to do stuff, you know, even though this is happening to all of us. And stay kind, stay generous.
Love it. Well, Yuna, Carlo, Ben, thank you so much for chatting with me. This has been great.
Thank you,
I have one final question
thank
that
you.
I end the show with. And I want to ask each of you, and I want to start with Yuna. What does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
That's a good one.
Then you're gonna go, oh, is it me?
Can I start with you, or should we start with someone else?
Okay. What does it mean? Okay. Was it again?
What does it mean to you to make it in the new music business?
To make it, being a successful artist to me is having like a solid fan base, you know, and just like being able to make music for a very, very long time and being able to have people connected to the music that you're making. You know, I think that's like my version of making it. You know, a lot of other artists may be like, you know, making millions, this and that, but for me it's like it always has to come back to music. You know, that's the most important thing. And I don't know, I will be very sad or very depressed if one day I just can't write anymore. You know, you'll just never know these things. You know, it's just like writing music is like a magical thing. And it's like, what if one day it goes away? I think like that would be the end for me, you know, like it's just something that I love doing. I enjoy doing. I love working with people. I love music. I love performing. And that's making it for me, you know, and always having like an audience that will appreciate you for who you are and the kind of music that you put out. And they love your music. That's it. Nice. You know? And yeah,
I love it. Carlo.
Ooh. Okay. What is making it? So I think making it in the new music business is being able to have your own vision and do things your own way with your own rules, with nobody telling you what to do, and you know, creating your own version of happiness.
Nice.
That's great.
Love it. Ben.
Making it for me in the old business, the new business, or in between, is I know I've made it when I wake up every single morning and I'm happy. That's it for me. It's really simple. I think that I've been put here on earth to help people achieve their dreams. That makes me extremely happy. The process is what makes me happy. You know, when we started working with Una, I mean, I love working with Una. It's the greatest thing ever. I mean, we've established a phenomenal friendship. So for me, I know that I've made it in my business with her because we're really great friends and working with her is a joy. So it's about being happy. The money comes. If you're happy, money comes. It just gets sent to you. You attract it, you know? So that's it for me. What about you, Ari? What makes you happy?
Oh man, if I can wake up every day, support the kind of lifestyle that I want to have doing what I love, that's making it for me.
Seriously,
so that's it.
Dude.
It's I'm simple.
Yeah, me too. I'm so simple.
So right on. Well, thank you guys. It's been a pleasure. I really appreciate it. It was a really interesting conversation. And have a wonderful day, night, and all of that.
All awesome. Right. Cool. Thanks, sorry.
Thank you.
Peace, guys.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. So it is brought to you by DistroKid. DistroKid is a distribution service that can get your music into all the DSPs like Spotify, Apple Music, TikTok, Tidal, Instagram. Over a million artists have used DistroKid. I'm one of those artists. I've used DistroKid to get my music out, distribute some of my songs. As you know, as I look into all of these distribution services, I test them out. And DistroKid is great. They offer a ton of features, annual fee, unlimited uploads, and you keep 100% of your royalties. Check out distrokid.com.